The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Beautiful man. Welcome to the Savage Nation. That was Oscar Grant Sr., a speech to the rabble in the streets of Oakland yesterday as he tried to get them to stop rioting. Actually, he said, don't do it in my grandson's name. Remember, he lost everything a man could lose. He lost his grandson. His grandson was the black man who was handcuffed on his laying on the ground and shot in the back. And I believe shot accidentally, incidentally. Nobody on earth would shoot a man in the back while he's handcuffed in front of 20 police and in front of 20 people with cameras. It's obviously an accident. The man should go to jail. He is going to jail. And it was what the jury determined it was. And he was saying, don't tear up my city. I love it. That did not stop the white communists from provoking the violence and engaging in the violence and stirring up, frankly, the black masses in Oakland to riot and to burn and to break windows. And along with the white vermin, the anarchists, there was the white vermin in the media, the Channel 2, 4, 5 people. I have never seen anything like this in my life. These are the people in the media, not only in the San Francisco Bay Area, but across America, whether it be on ABC, CBS, or NBC. These are the people who have destroyed America. They are the people who sit there and wait for the Palestinians to throw rocks and get hit with a rubber bullet. They are the people who pay protesters around America to cause a mayhem so they can film it. They are the true terrorists. The true terrorists in America who have brought us to our knees, who have sacked this country, who have permitted the enemies of America to come in and buy us for 5 cents on the dollar, are the vermin in the media, the girls and the boys without a conscience. The boys and the girls in the media stirred up the masses yesterday in a way you couldn't believe. The cameras were sitting there. There was no violence. And every 2 minutes, one of the hysterical women would say, well, how is it on 17th Street? Is there anything over there? Nothing yet. We don't see anything yet. Ooh, we just heard something. Maybe there's something. And the vermin would run with the cameras, with the tags hanging from their necks. Now, what am I talking about? I'm talking about a terrible tragedy. It's the tragedy of Oscar Grant. He caused a ruckus in a train station. Him and his friends, they got arrested. He was handcuffed on the ground by a BART police officer. He certainly didn't deserve to die. He deserved to be arrested. While he was on the ground, apparently there was a tussle, and this inexperienced, frightened cop reached for a taser, pulled out his gun, thought he had a taser, and shot the kid in the back. Now, you say, come on, that's nonsense. He knew what he was doing. No, he didn't know what he was doing. Nobody on earth would do it with cameras rolling. So let's put that aside. Put your biases aside. This guy, this white cop's going to go to jail. He's going to go to jail for a long time. I don't know if he'll even survive jail. I hope he does. Okay? Now, that's not good enough for Eric Holder. Eric Holder doesn't have enough to investigate. Now he's going to investigate this to see if he can provoke a little more agitation amongst black people in America and to give a little more leeway to the white communists, anarchists, etc. Now, having laid the groundwork, there is a hero to have come out of this, as I said to you, and the hero is Oscar Grant Sr. Now, I saw the man speak on TV. I was stunned, because if you heard what he said, I love this city. Don't tear it up, because that will dishonor my grandson more than anything will. But I looked at something that no one in the media has reported, and I'll report it here on the Savage Nation. Oscar Grant Sr., who called for nonviolence after this verdict of involuntary manslaughter, Oscar Grant Sr. was wearing a cap. And you know what the cap said? The cap said Airborne, U.S. Marine Corps. I don't think he found it in a trash bin. I believe Oscar Grant Sr. is the kind of American that has made America great and will make America great again. And I want to play for you now. Again, this is the grandfather of the young man who was shot by the cop. Listen to clip five now.
If you people know something about the law, Genesis 9 verse 6 says that man that takes another man's life shall pay for it with his own.
Amen.
So leave that alone. I know the verdict was wrong. But let's don't tear Oakland up for it.
Two rights
don't make a wrong. Or two wrongs don't make a right. Please, the people. And I love all of you.
You hear this? Two wrongs don't make a right. And he was trying to stop the crowd from rioting. But unfortunately, the white scum, the communist radicals, those who were anarchists who were trying to set the city on fire, in fact, did commit about 86 different cases of violence in the city. And the looting, what does looting a pair of sneakers have to do with a verdict? Tell me what that has to do with the death of a young man. Now, okay, so I watched that for hours last night. Then I watched a movie. The movie was All Quiet on the Western Front, a remake from 1979, starring Ernest Borgnine, of all people, which was unbelievable. I had seen the original All Quiet on the Western Front, the black and white one. I read the book by Ray Marquet. But I will tell you, this movie was so disquieting, All Quiet on the Western Front. It takes a group of upper-class German boys and follows them through their school years, enlisting in the army, actually being drafted in the army, all the way through the basic training into the army, being butchered on the Western Front, gassed, bayoneted. It was unbelievable to me to watch this because they became real to you. And all I could think of was the hell of war and how any man who has ever gone to war is anti-war. I don't believe there's one man listening to the show who was in the military who wants to go to war again to kill somebody unless he's a psychopath. The only people who seem to want to go to war are people like the Weekly Standard crowd in New York, the guys who never were in the military themselves, who egged Bush on to invade Iraq, who egged Bush on to invade Afghanistan, who are now cheering Obama for continuing the neocon policy of endless war. You see, guys at the Weekly Standard, whose name I forget, what is his name, Beowulf, the guy whose father gave him, Bill Kristol, his father set him up in business. Bill Kristol looks like a decent enough kind of guy, but never was in the military. If he's so gung-ho for the war, why doesn't Bill Kristol just get on a little weight loss program, run around the Central Park Reservoir for a month, and enlist in the military, go over there, and go on the front lines in Afghanistan. Go ride in a Humvee. Go ride in a Humvee, Bill. Then we'll believe a word you say. There's only one reason this country has been at war for the last 15 years or so. It seems like forever we've been at war. And that is the government military-industrial complex. The military-industrial complex that the great general and President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned us about. Eisenhower was the supreme Allied commander in World War II. He led the he supervised, or shall I say, led the invasion of Normandy, the beaches of Normandy, for example. He was the number one guy. He went all the way back to World War I. He became the president in the 1950s. And the man was anti-war. The man said, beware the military-industrial complex. In fact, if you have that sound, we're going to play it in the next segment on the show, because that's what we're living through right now. I know young men who have fought in Iraq and are fighting in Afghanistan. I've asked them, why are we there? They said, we don't know. They have no idea what their mission is. Nobody knows what the hell we're doing in Afghanistan. All they know is that they've been sent there and they have to come back in one piece. And all they know is that they're sent there for reasons somebody else knows, but they don't know. There is no mission. There is no purpose to the mission. And the only people who are for the war, certainly not the left wing, doesn't want us to be in Afghanistan, even though they egged it on for years. Remember all the years that Bush was in Iraq? The vermin on the left was saying, oh, it's the wrong war. You should have invaded Afghanistan. They used to call the show. Why should you invade Afghanistan? Did the Afghanis attack us on 9/11? Afghanistan is a country that is run by troglodytes, medieval cavemen, troglodytes who circumcise their women with blunt instruments. They live in caves. They kill each other. They have been killing each other. They beat the British three times. There's no end in sight to the war. It has bankrupted our treasury. But more importantly, it has committed mayhem against our young men. And so I say, well, what does Oakland have to do with Afghanistan? The same thing that Oscar Grant Sr. said is what I'm trying to tell you. The Bible may say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but we're not living in biblical times. We have to be better than the troglodytes. That does not mean we have no right to defend ourselves. That does not mean if after we leave Afghanistan and more troglodytes come there from Dearborn or Newark or San Francisco or Paris and they all flood in there because, hey, we now have a homeland. Yee-hee. The troglodytes now have a homeland and it's called Afghanistan. I say then unleash what we have on them. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Ain't no way these people got no business boarding up their business. You tearing up where you live at. You burn it down tomorrow. Where you gonna shop at day after tomorrow? This is our place. I stayed away from the trial because it hurt me so much where it went down. But my daughter called me and said, Daddy, you got to go downtown and speak. I'm telling you people, man, don't tear up Oakland. I love this place.
Now there is a hero. There is a hero. His grandson was killed by a cop inadvertently. Yes, shouldn't have happened. Cops going to jail. But that's not good enough for the Marvins in the legal profession. All of the good Marvin defense attorneys who went to NYU and Columbia and Harvard and were stoned for 5 years, who are now out there devastating America like boll weevils with their law degrees. Law degree, my eye, it's a hate degree. A degree of hatred unlike any ever seen in American history. A rat could do no worse than these people are doing to the law, legal system and to this country. Stirring up hatred from top to bottom. And so the riots occurred anyway because the vermin in the media were dying to see blood flow and to see buildings burn. Burn, baby, burn. Boy, did they want another Rodney King. So the little women who couldn't get jobs working as masseuses or as hookers, who are now standing there with lipstick on their collar, can keep their jobs because the ratings would be good. It doesn't matter if they see a city burning for their ratings. Didn't matter to them. But this man stood up and he said, don't burn, don't loot. And that's the man who lost the grandson. The same way the men who came out of the war, the men who come out of a war, hate war. And it's only men like Bill Kristol and the neocons who seem to never have enough war. Never enough. And so I say to you, I recommend, let's say, a book, All Quiet on the Western Front by Eric Maria Remarque. If you don't want to read the book because you don't read anymore, you only text, and you only have the capacity to read 15 characters total at a time, then get the DVD or the video, 1979 version, in color with Ernest Borgnine. It's about 3 hours long. It's probably the best movie you could ever watch with your children right now because it doesn't tell you that all war is bad or that, you know, don't go to war or don't defend yourself. That's not the point. The points, well, you'll figure out what the points are. You'll see what happens to the young men when they go out to the Western Front. You'll see the kind of lives they live, the heroic lives they had to live in the trenches. With rats eating at their food, the lice, the starvation, they were hardly fed, the poisonous gases, the hand-to-hand combat. The most touching scene in that movie is when he falls into a crater hole, a bombshell hole, a crater caused by one of the artillery shells in the middle of mud. And he's laying there, cowering for his life, this German soldier, because the French are marching right nearby him and he's playing dead and then they pass by. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, a French soldier jumps into the same artillery hole to survive the blasts that are flying from either side. And the German soldier pulls out a knife. Remember, this kid was just a nice kid from a middle-class home. And he stabs the Frenchman, but not to death. and the Frenchman is dying slowly next to him. And he's looking at him and listening to him moan all night long as shells burst overhead. And he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't want to kill him because he's not a murderer. He doesn't have any capacity to save him because he's not a doctor. And he's laying there looking in the eyes of this Frenchman who he just stabbed in the stomach. And a guy is dying a slow, miserable death all night long. And finally in the morning, he can't take it anymore. So he reaches for his bayonet again. And you think he's going to stab him. And he puts it down. He pulls out instead bandages. He opens up the guy's uniform and he sees what he had done to him. He sees the blood coming out and the guts. And then he pulls out a bandage and tries to heal and puts the enemy's head, the Frenchman's head in his hand, looks at him and he dies in his arms. I said, that told the whole story. Why did they kill each other? World War I, of all the wars I have ever studied, was the least important war in history. World War I started because of the ego of fat, bloated old men in nations, because one man did this and the other man did that. One man insulted the other one. Big, old, bloated, fat men sent young men to die for absolutely nothing. And it led to Adolf Hitler, by the way. Do you realize that had there not been a League of Nations, which was the UN of its time, that punished Germany after World War I with a reparation, so to speak, for the damage Germany had caused, bankrupted Germany, caused massive unemployment and starvation, debased the currency to the point where the Deutsche Mark became worthless, and it caused such social upheaval in Germany that it created the ripeness of ground, the fertility of ground, for a madman like Hitler to arise. Was it not for the insanity of the League of Nations, the UN of its time, and the reparations, there would have been no Hitler. And that is the truth, my friends. And so violence only begets more violence. But as I say, where you want to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. A man comes to do you or your family harm, kill him. Period. End of story. Shoot him at the gate. And that means your gate. That means your border. That means your nation. End of story. And you can still be a devout, wonderful, wonderful anti-war conservative American. You have a right to defend yourself and your life and your family's life and your nation. But it doesn't mean you go and seek out foreign wars for the sake of Bill Kristol and the Weekly Standard.
Savage.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
That's Eisenhower warning us back in the 50s about the emerging military-industrial complex, which is why we are in Afghanistan. At least that's a principal reason we are in Afghanistan. Do you know that during the Iraq War, and do you know that during the Afghanistan War, that there are no cooks in the U.S. military that I know of? Do you know that they have outsourced the food service in the military to contractors who charge the government, meaning you, for each meal that a soldier eats? Did you know that? I think the number was $16 a meal. Are you aware of the fact that the slop that is served to our soldiers, which, by the way, is not as good as that served to prisoners in San Quentin Prison in San Francisco Bay. The prisoners in San Francisco eat better meals than our soldiers are eating. The Muslims imprisoned in Gitmo are fed far better halal meals than our soldiers are fed in Afghanistan. You don't know any of this. But the point is, you remember pictures of World War II, Korea? The Army had everything, laundries and chefs, and they cooked. You're enlisted, you cook, this and that. No, no more. Now the contractor gets to provide the food at the cost of billions of dollars a year. Did you know any of this? You don't think that there's money involved? Wherever there's a war, there's money. You have any idea why the country is near bankruptcy? Why the government is running the press around the clock? The wars have something to do with it. Now I want to say something else that you never thought you'd hear coming out of the lips of Michael Savage. And I'll say it right now. Obama won for one reason, and one reason only. And that's because he won the blue-collar white vote away from McCain, a large portion of them. And the reason the blue-collar guys and women moved away from McCain and to Obama is because Obama said he would end the war. You see, the people whose sons are dying in Iraq or died in Iraq, and the people whose sons are dying in Afghanistan are not Bill Kristol. No, they're not Bill Kristol. They're not even the leaders of this country. The people whose children are dying in these wars are fundamentally white, blue-collar families. And they didn't want to see their children die unnecessarily in Afghanistan. So they said, you know what, Obama's anti-war. I'll take a chance on him because McCain is a continuation of this Republican war machine. I want nothing to do with it. So they vote for Obama, and they wake up, and what do they have? The same thing as they would have had under Bush or McCain. Because Bush, McCain, Obama, they're just figureheads like the Queen of England. At the end of the day, yes, they have some policy differentials, no question about it. They have some stylistic differentials, no question about it. But they're fundamentally, in my opinion, figureheads. They are not the rulers of this country. The rulers are unseen. The rulers are unknown. The rulers may not even be American. Likely they are not American. And we don't have to go further into this. I mentioned, you can pretty much figure out who I'm talking about here. But the fact of the matter is there's no reason that Obama won other than his anti-war platform. And yet, he did not end the war, did he? And yet we woke up last year and found that he was sending 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan. We were shocked, remember? We were shocked. Now, why did they fire McChrystal 2 weeks ago? Remember that story? One of our certifiable real warriors, a man who actually went out on night missions killing the enemy with his bare hands, according to what we've read, was fired. And he was replaced by a more, shall we say, intellectual general by the name of Petraeus. But the policy hasn't changed. The same methodology is being used that was being used before, albeit perhaps with a little more, a little less constraint upon our troops. In other words, the rules of engagement are so horrible. You speak to young men who come back, they cannot believe what they're being told to face. They're basically being set up as targets to draw the enemy out so the enemy can be killed. Our men are being set up like shooting ducks in a gallery so that they can get the enemy to pop out from behind a building and shoot at them. There's no regard for our men whatsoever. I've never seen anything like it. They're being used like cannon fodder, the same way men were sacrificed in every war, like cannon fodder, for the men who sit like big fat feasters at parties in Washington. And so, as I say, if Obama had ended the war, just point blank said, look, I came to power. I came as an anti-war guy. There's no reason for us to be here. And I want to tell the American people, whether you like me on any other issue, I'm ending the war. The troops are coming home, and that's the end of it. And if you don't like it, then put somebody else in who's a war candidate. Guess what? He will have done an awful lot as a president, but he's not going to do that because he doesn't call the shots. And that's all I want to say right now on this issue. I don't think that you understand that you can be a conservative and be anti-war. Where did you see that because you love America, you have to walk down the path of the beating drum when the drums are being beat by guys like the Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol, and the other neocons who don't fight in the war? None of them have enlisted. There was a time when a man might have enlisted. And go, well, I believe in the war. Tell you what, I'm 50, but I'm leaving my family. I'm going to join up. At last I know, Bill Kristol and his cohorts in the east side of Manhattan haven't joined up yet. You want me to name five other neocons? Because I ain't one of them. Don't confuse me with one of those people who are beating the war drums, because I have never been one of them. Never. Now, having said all of that, as I said, I'll say it to 100 times till you finally get me right. You can be anti-war and still be capable of defending yourself. You can be a peace-loving man but capable of defending yourself. You can be Oscar Grant Sr., whose grandson was killed by a cop while he was shackled to the ground, and still call for nonviolence. It makes you a greater man, not a weaker man. Do you understand that? Pete in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Mike? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I actually had the pleasure of meeting you one time on the North Beach on Columbus one night.
And Thank you.
Just said hi to you, and it was really nice to actually see you. It was many years ago.
Thank you.
You're a nice man, and you speak from the heart. And I'm in public safety. I was on duty yesterday for 24 hours. And so we watched a lot of news because we didn't know if we were going over into Oakland to back up those guys over there. And all you saw on the news, especially later on, was a lot of hippie-looking white people being arrested. It was very
That's
little...
Right. That is right. All the vermin from the University of California, from the social service agencies, from the pot clubs, were out there egging on the blacks to burn, baby, burn. That is absolutely right.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, all the guys had to come in from their homes. I mean, you know, they were paid for it. They came in and whatnot. They're all gearing up for Armageddon over there. And
the police did the greatest job I've ever seen. This could have been a Los Angeles after Rodney King, but the police have gotten so good at what they're doing, and they know who the troublemakers are, by the way. They had the names and the faces of every one of those white bastard anarchists who came there to cause mayhem. And they started to arrest them right from the beginning. In fact, right at the beginning, these white bastard anarchists ran up on a roof and started to throw M1000 fireworks down onto the police. They were immediately dragged off and put away. Do you know that or not? But take a guess who's going to scream police brutality today. Probably Marvin, one of the brilliant lawyers from Dolt Law School, or one of the vermin from NYU who moved out here, who doesn't know how good he has it. Don't get me started with the lawyers, because it's they who killed this country, Pete, along with their sisters in the media. And I'm going to stop right there. Houston, Texas, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, Michael, you're really hitting the nail on the head today. I am a conservative. I'm an anti-war conservative. And I just want to go a little bit deeper down the rabbit hole. I have a four-pronged theory as to why we're in Afghanistan, and I want to get your opinion on it. The first prong is we're in Afghanistan because it has a huge mineral deposit supply underneath the country, and the corporations are gearing up for that.
Let's pause right there. That was only reported about 5 or 6 weeks ago, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, but yes. We were in there longer. We were in there 8 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so why are we in there then, other than the minerals now?
Okay, there are three other points, okay? Number two, and this is true. I live in Houston, Texas. There's a corporation here that had a big headquarters in Sugar Land, Texas, which is a suburb, called Unical Corporation. You can look at the video if it's still on the internet. I believe it is. Unical Corporation management had members of the Taliban, turbaned members of the Taliban, in 1997, wined and dined at Unical headquarters in Sugar Land, Texas, Michael, because they wanted permission from the Taliban to run a pipeline from Tajikistan through Afghanistan, and the Taliban said no. Now, isn't it coincidental?
Don, hold off for a minute. It's funny I'm smiling, because in 1998, I wrote an article entitled, what was it called? The Oily Tracks, Kosovo, the Oily Tracks Run Right Through It. I wrote that in 1998. What do you think Bill Clinton's merciless war crime of bombing Serbia relentlessly for 80 straight days had to do with? It had nothing to do with Serbia. It had all to do with stealing Kosovo from Serbia, separating it from Serbia. It had been part of Greater Serbia since the 1300s. They stole it so they could run pipelines through Kosovo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I love your show. You're brilliant, and you look beneath the surface. You're not a fake conservative like the golfer and the leprechaun and the wall banger. You're the only one on the air telling the truth. So that's point number two I want to make.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I'm glad you can discern the difference between one variety of butterfly and another.
They are bought and paid for, Michael. There's a word I could use for them. They're $50 bought and paid for, a word I could use for them. Okay.
I think you're being overly generous. I think you're being overly generous, but okay, I'll let you get away with that.
Dude, I mean, they sold their souls, Michael. You haven't sold your soul, and that's why I love you. Number three, here's my theory. Number three prong, the opium pipeline. Now, Afghanistan, as much as I'm not a fan of the Taliban, Michael, okay? But the Taliban is not Al-Qaeda. You know, the Leon Panetta, the head of the CIA, was on Meet the Press just a few weeks ago. He was asked point blank, Mr. Panetta, how many Al-Qaeda would you estimate are in Afghanistan? You know what he said, Michael? Oh, between 50 and 100. So if we spend $100 billion on this unnecessary war, we're spending $1 billion per Al-Qaeda member? I mean, what? What?
Yeah. Most Americans don't know what the difference is between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The Taliban are the local, let us say, war class who are raging war against the foreign invader. They're the same people who would have, let's say, their fathers fought against the Soviets. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so to them, it's an issue. To them, it's an issue of a foreign invasionary force in their country. And they don't want us here any more than they wanted the British or the Russians. That's what you're saying is the real essence of the Taliban.
I mean, obviously, they treat their women badly, but, you know, lots of countries have lots of problems. We don't go into North Korea, do we? Because there's no minerals under North Korea, and there's no opium fields. So my third part of my theory is I mean, it's unbelievable. I've seen pictures. These are not Photoshopped images on the internet. These are real pictures of British soldiers guarding. I mean, I don't know if they're guarding. They're standing next to huge poppy fields and the opium. You can check it out. The heroin production has gone up thousands of percent ever since the troops entered Afghanistan. Gee, I wonder who's profiting off that. Could that be the CIA? Are they running drugs? Huh? That's part three. Now, part four. And I'm from New York, and I'm of an ethnic persuasion. Okay.
Don, are you yourself? Do I understand that you are a Vietnam vet or not?
No, I'm not, sir. No, I was. My father's a World War II vet. He just passed away 2 months ago, and he had the Purple Heart. And he always warned me as a boy. He said, "Do not get fooled. World War II was a necessary war, but do not get fooled by these other wars. It's fought for the rich." And that's why it's so brilliant that you played Eisenhower's farewell address, which I believe was in 59 or 60, because Eisenhower, who was a great leader, saw what was coming. And all these stupid conservative Republicans who don't even understand anything about history, they're not Barry Goldwater.
Don, why in the world do you think other conservatives in the media, not all of them, but most of them, wrap themselves in this warmongering? What the hell is wrong with them?
They're whores, Michael. They're bought and paid for. I really believe they know.
Well, wait. I wouldn't say that truthfully. I mean, nice to say because they're my competitors, but I don't believe it's that they're whores. Do you think that they just don't even know what the hell they're talking about?
Well, how could they not? I mean, O'Reilly's not a stupid guy. I mean, he's not stupid.
Of all of the triumvirate, O'Reilly is the best educated. He has a real master's degree from Harvard. He knows what's going on. I can't say the same for the others. I really can't. Truthfully, I think many of them are ignoramuses, to be honest. Very shrewd, very successful ignoramuses. And they seem to be simply repeating what the hell the Republican Party tells them to say, or what they think the Republican Party sort of stands for.
Right. Well, you know, I've never made $20 million a year, Michael. I probably never will. But it might be tempting when you get there that you might just compromise your principles, you know? I mean, I have no other reason. I can't figure out why these guys, the triumvirate, is not telling the truth to the American people. But, you know, it's very sad. You hit the nail on the head so many times. This was the most brilliant show you've ever had. And I've been listening to you for many years. And I agree with you, not on 100%, but about 95% of what you say. It was the white, blue-collar people who got Obama in office.
Yes, exactly right. And by the way, then they've now moved away from him, and they say, well, it's because of the economy. That has a big part of it. But I think subliminally, I believe subconsciously as well, it is because they fear the war is going to touch their family. It's their sons who are going to come home in a casket. It's not Bill Kristol's son who's going to come home in a casket. And it's certainly not the loudmouths on the conservative side in the radio who have any sons over there, is it?
No, and you know, Barry Goldwater must be rolling over in his grave, and you know.
Well, Barry Goldwater, by the way, is my political hero. I loved him when I was a little boy. I thought he was the greatest of all of them. I loved everything he ever said. He was the real McCoy, hard as nails, a real Westerner. He looked like it. He acted like it. He talked like it. And, of course, he was shafted as the vote was stolen, as you well know, by the same forces that put Obama in power, shafted Barry Goldwater.
Absolutely. So, you know, if Leon Panetta is on Meet the Press, and I almost fell out of my chair, admitting there's only 50 to 100 Al-Qaeda. You know what the analogy would be? I mean, I saw this analogy in an article. I forgot where I read it. It's kind of as if America, in the last weeks of the war, after it was very clear that the Germans were totally defeated, the Nazis were totally defeated, went in and started fighting the Italians who were allies with Germany when they were already had... You know, I mean,
I hear you. Great caller. Terrific to hear from you. I'm sorry to hear that your father has left us. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're running quite late on the program. Let's go to a caller who's calling to us live from South Korea. Steve, you're in the Air Force. You're listening. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes,
I'd just like to comment on the food situation that you're talking about, feeding the airmen, soldiers, and
yes,
that I dealt with over in the Middle East. I've been deployed there 4 times. I've never been to a combat zone. I've been a support role all around the bases there. Basically, what happens is the government sets up a contract to feed the airmen. Like I said, I'm in the Air Force, so it's Air Force Base. And these contractors are mainly from Nepal, Philippines, India. They get paid $200 to $400 a month, $200 for dishwashers, $400 for managers, and then in between for the people that actually cook. They work 28 days a month, so that means they get 2 days off. They work 12-hour shifts, not counting the one-hour shift that they have to go through the search.
You're saying they're contracted as employees to cook for the troops. I was saying something different, which was that during Iraq, I understand there was a company related to Halliburton that was providing the food trays to the troops and billing America per tray. That's what soldiers had told me, Steve.
Okay, the way it works for us is the
so you basically are hiring third world labor, and it's fundamentally like slave labor. I get it. I thank you. But the food quality is abysmal. The average prisoner in an American prison is fed better than our troops anywhere in the world, according to what I know. In fact, I know one young man who just came back from a combat zone who said the food was so bad, he was living on dried soup that his mother sent him, Raymond, and cans of tuna fish. And also, for all you neocons in New York who might be listening before you go off to dinner with one of your Republican military-industrial complex friends, the Humvees were unarmored on the bottom, and they had to put sandbags underneath their butts to avoid having their genitals blown off so that you can write about it in your bloviating journals about the wonders of war and the wonders of patriotism when you have no children to begin with. Moreover, they wouldn't go to Iraq either because you have connections.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation, an anti-war conservative American radio program broadcasting from San Francisco throughout the world. It is Rock and Roll Friday. I love Danny and the Juniors. I don't know about you. It's when America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were women. When the chrome was thick and the women were women. There's no chrome on the cars anymore. Turn it on. I got a 65 caddy with a pair of bumpers on her. This is the one after the Dagmar caddy. It's you know, the 59 was the Dagmar years. But then the chrome. You know where the chrome came from? You talk about minerals. The chrome came out of New Caledonia, a lot of it, an island in the South Pacific. The French had the exclusive mining rights to the chrome. I think after they mined it to extinction, we went to the Toyota concept of a car, which is virtually no bumpers or rubber bumper. I don't like bumpers that aren't chrome, by the way, because every nick you have to go to a body shop. When did they come up with that? You talk about built-in obsolescence. When they make the bumper the same as the car, you talk about, okay, parking lot neurosis. I've defined it on the show years ago. You know, ding neurosis. I am a man who suffers various and sundry little quirks, and I will admit it. One of my quirks is ding neurosis. If I go anywhere, I have to park farther away than anyone would believe. No one wants to drive with me. He's like, Dad, please, we'll take our own car. I'll park on the other side of the lot in the dark. I'll walk in an unlit parking lot to put the car where no one can ding me, because the whole meal I'm sitting there, all I'm thinking about is someone opened the damn door and I know they wang the car. That I know if I even put it there, someone's going to pull right. You ever do that? You pull into a lot that's empty. You go to the older end, you know, and then you come back. The whole lot's still empty, but some schmuck pulled right next to you. Right next to you. You had to pull where you were down at the end near the tree in the mud and the water at the end of the lot where it's low, and he dinged your door. And there's nothing to do with that. But what are you going to do? Like, flatten four tires or key them? You're not that kind of person. You're not a liberal. You didn't go to boat law school. So I'd rather go to a restaurant someone else's car than my own. So there it is. It's a quirky kind of show. I mean, you get things you're not going to expect when you say conservative, right? You might think I'm supposed to bang a drum now that I'm for war. You go to war. You go to war, you from the Weekly Standard. You go to war. You join the Republican Endless War Party. That's all there is. Why are the Republicans the party of war? The same reason the Democrats are the party of war. Because if you look back, both parties are parties of war ever since World War II. What the hell are we doing in Afghanistan? Now, you could argue there was a reason we were in Iraq. I actually still don't believe it. I think they're the most ungrateful people on the planet. We were promised that we would get reparations in the form of oil. Bush lied not only about WMDs, but he also lied about reparations. The Iraq war fundamentally bankrupted our treasury. What did it cost? Does anyone really know? About $1 trillion, $10 trillion? Nobody knows what it cost. So you say, all right, the war's over. You liberated 24 million Shiites so they can join Ahmadinejad in creating a greater Persia. Wonderful. I'm glad we just helped Ahmadinejad create a greater Persia. Great. Now they range all the way to the Euphrates. The same mentality from Iran is now in there. At least we had the psycho Saddam Hussein, a Sunni, keeping them under control. Now they're liberated. And what'd they give us? Nothing. Not a barrel of oil for free. In fact, the oil rights were leased to China, the last I checked. So why were we in Iraq? Nobody knows. It was Bush's blunder. In plain English, he was whispered in his ear by a Weekly Standard crowd, of whom Bill Kristol is the general. He's the general. He's the armchair general. Yeah, go in because they bombed us. Now go into Afghanistan because they didn't bomb us, but they're generally no good, and we're gonna build a nation of Democrats. Democratic, they're going to go and vote now with a dot on their head. They're going to go in and vote, and they're all going to be happy when you put up a camel burger stand. They're going to put on a little hat and say, would you like camel dung with that burger? Fried whatever they eat. I don't know, camel burger. I don't think they kill their camels over there. They all can't wait to work in a camel stand selling camel meat. They can't wait to become a real American. They just can't wait to see Walmart on every corner in Kabul and the McDonald's and a pizza place. And then they cannot wait. They just can't wait to see internet pornography in every home. They can't wait to see their daughters become whores like the American women. They can't wait to see them wearing tight pants, showing everything you never wanted to see. They just can't wait to see the women walking around like Jezebels. Everything they've ever wanted, they can't wait to come into their country. Let me tell you something. If you were in Afghanistan, you'd be fighting along with them to make sure that the poison doesn't come into their household. And moreover, they would rather not see our legal system come into their country. They'd rather trust their life with a warlord than with a Harvard lawyer. They feel they get more justice from a warlord than they would from Marvin Schwartz from Harvard. And if you don't like what I'm saying, it's too bad. Go sue me. See if you can ban me in America next. I don't care. I'm too old to give a damn. I've earned the right to tell you the way I see it. And I'm going to tell you the way I see it. And you ought to be glad that I'm on the radio. You ought to be glad that you have Michael Savage speaking the truth. Because without me, what would there be? What you'd have is the neocon saying, go to war. War is good. Let your children die. Because we don't have any. Because we never even got married. And when we did get married, we married sterile girls in their 30s who don't even want children. They only married us for our broadcast money. Yeah. Tell it like it is, man. Yeah, you tell them, Mike. Go, man, go. So here we are, an endless war. First Iraq, now Afghanistan. But you're not over there, are you? Over there, over there. You want the other boys to go over. You want their sons to die, not your son. You want your son to follow you in your footsteps. That's natural. And you want freedom in America. You think that by killing Afghanis, you're going to have freedom? What the hell are we fighting for? I don't know. The last war we ever fought that made sense to me as an outsider was World War II. In fact, I'm obsessed with World War II. I watch it all the time. I'm obsessed with a Military History Channel. People say, well, why do you always watch that? because I love to see the bad guys lose. I know who the bad guys were and the good guys. And I know how it starts with Hitler in the wonderful, beautiful uniforms, and they're all pompous up there, drugged out of their minds, the devil-worshipping Nazis up there, marching around in their clean Hugo Boss outfits, and I see how it ends. It ends with their country in rubble. The thousand-year Reich lasted only a few years, and the country was destroyed because of the insanity of a few leaders. You look at what a few leaders can do to a people. The Germans were no better or no worse than we are. Do you know that? Are you aware of the fact that the German people themselves were no different than we are? But it took one leader to poison their minds and lead them to the worst part of themselves. And he destroyed their nation. And that's the power of what a leader can do to a nation when there are no checks and balances. That's the power of a dictatorship, that the people can be dragged into areas they never wanted to go. And in order to survive, they say amen. They go along with it. And here we are. Now we have a leader, and we don't know where he's dragging us. We do know that he has dictatorial tendencies. We do know that virtually everything he does is done by hook or by crook. Virtually everything this man does is not straight up. Virtually everything Obama does is crooked, one way or the other, against the will of the American people. It is crooked up and down the line. By hook or by crook, they trick you into it, they force you into it, they steal it from you, they beat it out of you, they threaten you, but they take it from you. You don't want cap and trade, you're going to get it anyway during the recess session. You didn't want a destruction of the medical care system, as imperfect and as corrupt and bloated as it was the best thing you could ever believe. You'll guess what, it was stolen from you by the wonderful regime of Obama. You don't like this, it doesn't matter what you like. You don't want 40 million illegal aliens, primarily from Mexico, turned into instant Democrat voters and citizens, people who don't even know what the American flag is. They don't know how to speak a word of English. You don't want it? It's too damn bad. He does. And he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care what you think. Barbara Boxer doesn't care what you think. None of the Democrats care what you think. John McCain doesn't care what you think. Most of the Republican Party doesn't care what you think. They all want the illegal aliens legalized, and that's why it's liable to happen. And so if you think that Obama is acting alone, you're out of your mind. There was a meeting not 2 weeks ago when some of the richest men in the world, some of whom identify as conservatives, said, oh, we're in favor of immigration reform. We need those slave workers in our factories. We need those cheap laborers in our factories, in our fields, in our hotel chains. And so therefore, we're in favor of amnesty for illegals. You didn't see that? I think Warren Buffett was there. The computer geek, whatever his name is, I don't even remember his name, the one who acts like Mr. Sheep, you know, the guy who's act as the sheepish guy, the college guy with the glasses, and a few others. Oh, they wanted, all of them wanted amnesty for illegals. So Obama does what they want, not what you want. You're the peons. You and I are fundamentally, you think I'm different than you because I have a radio show, you're wrong. I'm no different than you are in many ways. No, not really. Not at all. No different in some ways. Very different in other ways. But the fact of the matter is, we have no power. We're not in authority. We have no voice whatsoever. We may think we have a voice because I speak and you speak and we talk on the radio and you buy the books. But guess what? It doesn't seem to translate to Barack Hussein Obama or to John McCain or to Barbara Boxer. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. They do what the billionaires who put them in power want them to do. And apparently, if they want illegal aliens granted amnesty, they're going to get it. Doesn't matter how many times you say no, they're going to do it because we do not live in a republic anymore. We do not live in a democracy. We live in an oligarchy. I've been telling you that for 15 straight years. An oligarchy, a government of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich. Now, unto itself, oligarchies are not necessarily dictatorships, nor are oligarchies necessarily dark and evil. Sometimes oligarchies can be quite benevolent. Sometimes oligarchies can do the right thing because sometimes the desires and the needs of the oligarchs are the same as the average person. But that's when the oligarchs were from the country. That's when the oligarchs were Americans, for example, or such, and they still had American feelings. Are you going to tell me that this breed of billionaire has an American feeling in one cell of their body? When they have companies that do business all over the world and America's merely another market, America's a rather small market when you compare it to China. So to them, what's America? It's a zip code. It's a zip code. It's just a market to them. It's not a flag. It's not a border. And it's not defined by a border language or culture. That's why Obama said not 2 weeks ago that a country is not defined by birth or by blood. Well, what the hell is it defined by then? Where you do business? So to him, of course, it's not defined by birth or blood because he wasn't born here and he has no blood attachment to America. That we understand. So he's the perfect internationalist, a representation for the internationalists who are dragging us into a hell that you cannot even imagine. A hell where there will be no checks and balances. A hell where there is no law except the law of those who make the law, not those who write the laws or those who read the laws, but those who make the laws. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the last great days of the great republic of the United States of America, and I believe that it is almost out of the hands of the American people. I believe that unless the Tea Parties get organized and come together and create one candidate, we're not going to see this revolution in November that the neocons and the others on the Republican side are predicting. And moreover, do I think we need that? I'm going to tell you something. Do you actually think that if we put that gang back in power, you're going to have a different America? The same gang that wrecked the country and gave it to Obama is suddenly going to come back and save you? Are you crazy? Are you out of your damn mind that you actually believe these schmucks in the radio tell you, well, the Republican resurgence, well, we're going to save this country. We're going to have smaller government. You're going to have smaller nothing. You're going to have the same garbage. Two-card Monty. There's no bean under either nut. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and ride.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. My religion is my religion. My religion is survival. I learned a long time ago that all religions mean nothing unless it gives you the ability to survive. How do you like, does that work for you? I've thought long and hard all of my life. I said, what is the purpose of religion? One of the purposes of religion is to keep man under control because man is basically bestial. Fundamentally, man is no good in a beast unless he's constrained either by religion, by society, or by his wife. I mean, it's a long-standing joke, but it's absolutely true. The woman has a tough job. So a man has to be constrained by religion, by society, and by his wife. That's true. Otherwise, a man is an animal. Take a look at what goes on in the country around you today. Here's a story you're not going to believe. Indian woman tries to flush newborn down plain toilet. I swear to God, an Indian woman gave birth to a baby in the lavatory of an international passenger plane and tried to dispose of it down the toilet. The infant was found stuck in the toilet after the plane landed in northern India and was rushed to the hospital, still attached to the toilet bowl. And I'm not reading this for shock. It's because it shows you the debased level of the human condition today. I mean, this kind of behavior is something you'd expect from Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan, in my opinion. You'd expect this from an American slut movie star. But would you expect it from a third world nation? Didn't you assume that somebody from a Hindu nation had more respect for life? The 22-year-old mother was reported to have left the plane when it landed and was later arrested in the airport after the cabin crew on the Turkmenistan Airlines flight found the baby. Doctor at the hospital said the infant was in a critical condition. Now wait, newspapers reported the mother was an unmarried medical student returning home after completing a degree abroad. There's your answer, degree abroad. She had her mind already poisoned. Her soul was stolen from her in a university abroad. All of her culture was taken from her, and she wanted to be just another Western girl. Just sex and then throw the baby down a toilet bowl. Human life means nothing. Sex means everything. The same as a sneeze, you know, you sneeze in a tissue. That's what sex has become today. All right, we're all the same. I'm not a moralist. I told you that 1,000 times. And at a certain point, you have to say, oh, you're not a moralist? Well, maybe you should be a moralist. You mean there should be no morals at all in the world? There should be no morals anymore. If they say, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? This is what it ends up with, a girl flushing an infant down a toilet bowl on an airplane and leaving it stuck in a toilet bowl because she has a medical degree. And she learned how to be a doctor at a medical school where the Hippocratic Oath was thrown out of the window a long time ago and it was replaced by the Mengele Oath. Replaced by the oath of Dr. Mengele, not Hippocrates.
Savage.
Boom, boom, boom.
My real name is Mister.
Bomb the caves and tunnels and leave Afghanistan now. Bomb the caves and tunnels and leave Afghanistan now. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. I think today is going to mark the beginning of the real anti-war conservative nature of the Savage Nation. I mean, I have hinted about leaving Afghanistan for a while now because I see no reason for us to be there. I have tried to have someone articulate this for me, and I've yet to hear anyone clearly articulate it. And I have to tell you that everyone knows that war is hell, especially the men who have fought it, whether it was the Civil War, which left so many dead, or the Vietnam War, which left so many dead and maimed, or the Iraq War, or the Afghanistan War. This is not to diminish the valor or the courage of the men who are in combat. In fact, the contrary is true. I'm addressing my concerns to those, especially those in the conservative media, so-called, who are beating the war drums daily. And all they're doing, in my opinion, is they're not increasing our national security. What they're doing is they're killing young American men. And for what, I don't know. I have no idea why we are in Afghanistan, if I mean our sore purpose. Fine. And I want to go back again to what I said earlier. Obama won, and I don't know if anyone made it as clear as I just made it for you, but this is all spelled out in my new book. I keep giving it away, and I shouldn't verbally, but all right, it's a radio show. My book will be out October 12th. I can hardly wait so I can refer the page to you. I think it's actually already on Amazon, believe it or not. I don't even want you to look, but it's up there. I guess if you look, you can see the title and everything else in the picture. But one of my fundamental clarion calls in the new book is to get the hell out of Afghanistan. And one of the ideas that I articulate in my new book coming out in October is that the primary reason Obama won was to get us out of Afghanistan. Now, the reason I say that is because you knew he was going to get the black vote, which he did. I mean, was that a surprise? No. You knew he was going to get the drug addict hippie college vote. That was no surprise. Sure, they drummed up a little bit more support for them than normal, but that's not what pushed him over the top. He got a large percentage of the white voter who was normally going to vote Republican, but they saw too many of their own children and their friends' children coming home in pieces or in body bags from Iraq, and they just didn't want another endless war. It went on forever. At least they could buy the crap for a few years, but they didn't want it another 10 years. They didn't want another 30 years war. They didn't want it. They didn't want their son to go over there and die. And they said, you know what, I don't really care who wins. It's all the same. They're all crooks. At least this guy, this black guy, is going to get us out of Afghanistan. I'm going to vote for him. So he won, in my estimation, about 28 to 30% of the white, blue-collar vote that would normally have gone to McCain. But they knew McCain was full of crap, and he was a continuation of Bush. So he said, all right, we'll vote for this guy. We don't know what the hell he's going to do. We don't care. They're all the same, blah, blah, blah. At least we won't have to worry about our kid coming home, you know, mutilated or dead. So they voted for him. And guess what happened? He sent 30,000 troops to Afghanistan virtually 2 months later, 3 months later, and no one even noticed it. Nobody, not a word, not a word. So now that we're coming upon the November election, the Republicans got all of the yakkers in the media. Oh, we're going to win. We're going to knock out 12 to 25, 50. It's going to be a bloodbath. We're going to come back and we're going to save America. This way to the egress, step right up, Ringling Brothers, Bonham and Republican Party. Here we come. We're going to save you with small government, low taxes. We're going to privatize everything. We're going to sell the White House to the Chinese. You're going to wake up tomorrow. We're going to lease the White House back on a double lease plan, derivative White House plan. We're going to buy that White House. Lease that White House, sell that White House, rebuy that White House. We're going to paint that White House. We're going to make it red, white, and blue. It's going to be Chinese and American. It's going to be run in a much more cost-efficient manner because we privatized the White House, the greenhouse, the outhouse, your house, my house. Step right up to the Republican egress. Here we come. We got the golfer. We got the wall banger. We're all here. We're all there. You're all there. You're all here. Step right up. We're going to take America. Well, guess what's going to happen? Mike has a different idea of it. You see, Obama may not be as foolish as you think. In fact, he's probably a lot smarter than you think. He is the president, after all. He didn't get there by being stupid. It is true that he is there because powerful interests want him there, as true for Bush and anyone else. But the fact of the matter is, the people who put him in power may want him to stay in power. They may not be ready yet for the old regime to come back because the new regime has not yet mined all of the ground yet, so to speak. There's plenty of fish yet to come out of the pond before they bring back the next team. So what they're going to do, and you don't have to be a genius to see this, all you have to do is keep watching the bouncing ball. They just moved another aircraft carrier group into the area. Another one went in there. They're moving troops. They're moving men. Israel suddenly is our best friend again. They probably told Netanyahu, don't worry, Bubala. There's going to be plenty of gefilte fish in your future. Don't worry, we're sending the matzah packages. We're going to bomb Iran with you. And the reason they're going to do it is because in one fell swoop, once the Democrats unleash this incredible military that we have and let our heroes go after those cave dwellers and they start killing enough troglodytes and they smash Ahmadinejad into the Stone Age, and suddenly the threat to the Saudis and the threat to the Jordanian Sunnis, by the way, from the Shiite upstart called Ahmadinejad, who himself is probably not even Iranian by descent, according to Iranians I've spoken to. There's a great similarity, by the way, which no one has seemed to notice in the media, between a certain Austrian who declared himself to be a more patriotic German than any and led Germany to destruction, and Ahmadinejad, who may be from Turkey, who is about to lead Iran into the over the abyss with his insanity and his Jew hatred and his hatred of the West and his friends in the throwback turbans. Ladies and gentlemen, because I am the great Shahs, the great Shahs, the great Shahs, the great Naz just told you the truth. Because the great Naz sees all and says all, and I am predicting that the war will come, not in August, not the drums of August, because the election is not in September. And since the American moron cannot remember anything for more than approximately 12 or 13 seconds, the war might have to come a day before the election. But I think that might be too close to the election for them to actually even know that it happened, because they won't have heard it about, they won't heard about it on the radio until the. So they have to do it perhaps 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks before the election. My guesstimation is October surprise will not be a surprise to yours. Truly, the October war will no doubt roll itself out. And one night you'll wake up at 3 a.m. with your great insomnias across the land, and you will hear the roar of the B-2s leaving the air bases once again on a mission, a milk run to Ahmadinejad's homeland. Now, of course, it will not be a devastation of the Persian people, because they're a wonderful, beautiful, advanced civilization, and nobody wants to decimate the people themselves. But it will be a surgical bombardment, as we all understand, of the nuclear facilities, which will certainly not devastate all of them, because they're so deeply within the ground. But God only knows what weapons we have. I don't know how deep these bunker busters can go today. I suspect it will put them back maybe 25 years. There will be a regime change. The women will be able to take off those filthy burkas. The women will be able to drive cars again. They'll be able to put glasses on again and go back to school and perhaps be human beings again instead of being chattel of these old throwback bums, the 12th century little old men who oppress them with their hatred, calling it the rugaboo, dugaboo, hugaboo, mugaboo, that keeps them impressed with the fact that the women must be oppressed for the little men with the big beards to be impressed by oppressing the women. And that's my prediction for October. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let us go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Sacramento, Melissa, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Melissa?
Hello, I'm so happy to be speaking with you. I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to say that. And when I first got in my car today leaving work, I heard you say anti-war conservative talk show, and it just did my heart so much good. Just really happy to hear you.
That's right, because everyone thinks that in order to love America and in order to believe in borders, language, and culture, that you have to be a warmongering neocon, and that is because they don't understand that there are subtle differences between various positions.
Of course.
Right. But I think the fact is that people have lined up with stereotypes. Republicans, warmongers, Democrats, not. And yet here we have a Democrat anti-war president who's a warmonger. How does that figure?
It actually broke my heart because I did vote for him. I am a registered Democrat. I'm actually pretty liberal. But when I heard he was sending 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan, I withdrew any support that I had, formerly had for the president.
But what? Okay, having said all of that, Melissa, having said all of that, what if our national interests were in fact being threatened somewhere and there was a draft and men were being called up and women would be called up, because they also should fight, by the way. Would you be willing in your own heart to say, yes, this is a just war and we should go to war?
There are rare instances of just war. However, I don't think that that's true for the situation in the Middle East whatsoever.
I think that says it exactly right. I agree with you 100%. But don't worry. Don't worry, my dear, because soon we will have a very just war. No matter what you may think, we are simply a small nation, a degenerate nation, a weakened nation, a hollowed out nation. And soon the enemies who have put us in this position will make their move. I can guarantee you as I sit here, it will happen. They've already gone after our currency. They've tried to steal our currency and our treasury. They did a very good job. The only good news, if you want me to stop being so pessimistic, I realize many of you think that you have to be optimistic to be an American. You think that optimism is part of the American way. Well, good luck to you. If it works for you, God bless you. I've always used pessimism myself. To be very frank with you, I've been cynical and pessimistic since I'm about 7 years old, owing to the life I led and owing to the blows I've had to take and owing to the fact that I know reality. So to me, pessimism and cynicism has always worked. So it worked very well, frankly. So there's no point changing horses in midstream, and I'm way past midstream, by the way, and I'm not talking about a visit to the urologist. So now we'll go on to what I was saying to you before I got so easily distracted, because I am past that point. I forgot where, I swear to God, I'm just so giddy with a feeling of relief that so many people are finally coming to understand how they've been hoodwinked, and hoodwinked in a way that's so dangerous, it's unbelievable to me. And you realize that the one thing we had that was firm was our borders until Clinton came along. Yes, it was Bill Clinton who started to erase the borders. Yes, it was Bill Clinton who got out that big eraser when he tried to pass NAFTA and GATT. And suddenly, I do remember very clearly, there was an INS commissioner. I can even remember her name. Her name was Meisner. Oh, yes. Yes, it was indeed. I have a memory like an elephant. It was old Doris Meisner, I believe, who ran the, not the IRS, pardon me, the INS, the Immigration Naturalization Service. And it was she who said we must erase the border. She worked around the clock to dissolve the border with Mexico for all the reasons we know, and we don't have to go into it. So it started with Clinton, it escalated with Bush, and it's almost catastrophically over under Obama. But they are simply the tools of the oligarchic gods who have put them in place to erase the border. They need the factories and the Senate, and we're just simply a small market for the emerged, the newly emerged, the newly created world economy. And if you look at the world economy and you see the number of consumers in China and the number of Buicks they're selling in China compared to the number of Buicks that they're selling in Brooklyn, you understand where this country has gone. In years past, your grandfather would have bought a Buick, whether it was the Buick Roadmaster. If he was near a Rockefeller, he got a Roadmaster. If he was a Rockefeller in Brooklyn, he bought a Cadillac. And if he was really a rich one, he went from the 62 to the 82 to the Fleetwood. But today, those days are gone. He doesn't buy the Buick anymore. It's the guy who came out of Tibet, and he's gone from a Paddy to a Caddy in virtually one generation. That's the new buyer for General Motors, from a Paddy to a Caddy in one generation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Cats and kitties out there whipping and wailing and jumping up and down and sucking up all that juice and patting each other on the back and hipping each other who the greatest cat in the world is. Mr. Malenkoff, Mr. Talenkoff, Mr. Eisenhower, Mr. Woozer, Weezer, Mr. Wasser, Woozer, Mr. Woodhill, Mr. Beechhill, and Mr. Churchill, and all them hills gonna get you straight. If they can't get you straight, then no cat that knows a cat will straighten you. But I'm gonna put a cat on you was the coolest, grooviest, sweetest, wailingest, strongest, swingingest cat that ever stomped on this jumping green sphere, and to call this your cat, Denaz.
You're listening to Lord Buckley with one of his great jazz poems called The Great Naz. Now, his real name was Richard Merle Buckley. The reason I'm playing it is because many people say, like, who were your inspirations? He was actually one of my vocal inspirations from many, many years ago. No one even knows who Lord Buckley is anymore. But you listen to the tone of his voice and the way he can play with the iambics. It's unbelievable to me. It was like playing the piano with his mouth and making up words just rolled and rolled and rolled. You know, people say Lenny Bruce, this and that. yeah, pieces of this and that. I mean, fundamentally, it's me at this point. But there are influences. And just for a little peek behind the curtain, so to speak, there's a little Lord Buckley for you, ladies and gentlemen. So here we sit, and we see a riot in the Bay Area yesterday. Cop was given a jail sentence that's probably basically a very long one, and most people understood that it was a horrible situation and that Oscar Grant didn't deserve to die while he was shackled to the ground. They understand that the verdict was correct in that sense, that it was involuntary manslaughter. He slaughtered a man involuntarily. No one on earth, no sane man who is a policeman, would shoot a man in the back while he's chained to the ground, particularly, my friends, when there are other officers around. And there are about 50 people with cell phone cameras. So it didn't happen because he wanted it to happen. It was a tussle. He reached for the wrong instrument of destruction, and that's the end of the story. And that was the correct verdict. And 99% of the people in the streets knew that. But the white communist radicals, of whom the Bay Area seems to have too many, couldn't take that. That wasn't good enough. So they went around trying to steam up the black people. And eventually, when the dark fell, they did burn and they looted. Now, what robbing sneakers has to do with justice for Oscar Grant, I'll never know. But as you well know, justice and riots have nothing to do with each other. It's all part of the socialist, communist, anarchist front that we are dealing with, the ugly, ugly, ugly side of America that exists because of our freedoms. They take advantage of it. They're sort of the lice of the body politic. The anarchists and the communists are the lice of the body politic. And it's something you have to put up with. It's part of the condition of our society. Three-fourths of those held in looting and vandalism of downtown Oakland, it just came out, were not from Oakland. They were white anarchists, primarily from San Francisco and the Environs. And so the police should be given golden medals for constraint yesterday. I know I couldn't do what they did and control myself. Not at all. I watched the constraint. I couldn't believe it. I can't believe how they arrest these guys and they march them in like they're their best friends with plastic handcuffs. And then you see the girls, the schmuck girls from Berkeley with the dungarees and a knapsack. To them, it was just an outing. Suddenly, they thought they were Martin Luther King Jr. marching. Or, oh, we got arrested for the Oscar Grant protest. Oh, I was put in a paddy wagon. Oh, I was booked. Oh, how exciting. Oh, it's disgusting. You know, if you were going to arrest these kids, make them clean up. Put them into Santa Rita and keep them there for a week. Let them get a real taste of what the minorities get in a jail for 1 week. Then you know what? You'd cut down on your anarchists by about 99% for the next protest. Put them in there and forget them for about a week. Just put them into the general population, all the little bright liberal girls from Berkeley and all of the liberal boys who think they're having an outing for the afternoon because they're going to be out in an hour. Put them into Santa Rita in the general pop for about 1 week and see how many anarchists there are at the end of that week. And as I say, there are solutions to the problems in America, but we don't have the political guts, nor do we have any leadership in any city, state, or a federal level that I can see. There are a few here and there. I've said that. I don't need to overgeneralize to make my point. So that's where we're at. And we're almost at a flat out of time in this hour. I hope you've enjoyed what you heard so far. In most of America, there's another big, big hour here of the Savage Nation. And if you'd like to continue following the hijinks of Michael Savage and the ideas that I have or whatever, go to michaelsavage.com or just what it is. I'm on the internet. I don't know. The show goes on everywhere in America at some time. It's the third largest radio show in America, which as far as I'm concerned is an absolute miracle considering that it occurs so late in the day. It is an independently syndicated program not owned by one of the majors. And more importantly, I speak the truth without anyone writing my script. Nobody tells me what to say. I cannot be categorized. I'm a one-off. And when I am gone, there will be nobody like me, my friends, because God makes people like snowflakes. So the little snowflake, Michael Savage, is waving goodbye.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And obviously you don't believe in killing white babies.
Not in that context, no, sir. No.
What
no.
context?
No context. Just for the sake of this interview, yeah. No context, sir. I don't believe in that. There are too many other white forces out here that are much more powerful that I, as a man, would focus on. I wouldn't focus on the babies, sir. I'd focus on the police. And if I was going to focus on anybody to do anything, I wouldn't say it because that would prevent me from doing it.
Oh, little girl of mine.
Here are some of the stories that you don't want to miss on MichaelSavage.com. Obama fundraiser drops prices. What does that mean? Obama is the best fundraiser the Democratic Party has, but his drawing power is so low now that they had to cut back on the amount of money they're charging for him to appear in a theater. On the right side of the website, Killing White Babies is Okay in Context, says new Black Panther chairman Malik Shabazz. It's unbelievable to me. Dems financial regulatory bill has gender and race quotas. Boulder's justice is not colorblind. Take a guess who is fighting Arizona for the government. It's the same lawyer who defended Johnny Jihad, the American Taliban. That's right. Why is Obama protecting this hateful revolutionary is on my site. Now, here's a great one. You remember the man with the hook? The hateful, disgusting, vile Muslim imam who preached hatred in England? They threw him out. The one with the hook, he blew his hand off making a bomb, thank Allah, wherever he was making it. Europe court says Abu Hamza cannot be sent to a U.S. prison because his human rights would be violated. Can you believe this? The European Court of Human Rights said it needed more time to consider whether the Supermax prison in America would be inhumane. I wonder if I can take my being banned in Britain to the European Court of Human Rights. I should look into that. This is all from MichaelSavage.com. Student fluency woes rising. What they mean is the illiteracy rate is rising, and that's because of the number of illegal aliens in the United States of America in the school system. They have pulled the entire educational system down. Did you know that? I know no one will say it, but I specialize in saying what no one will say. Here's another lame-brained, idiotic idea. A deal has been struck on a bill giving Native Hawaiians their own government. Duh. Do they want to just go back like they did before the missionaries arrived? I mean, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Sounds like they're being allowed to secede.
They should secede. Let them see where the welfare comes from. Maybe they can join China. And China can pick up the bill for them sitting around underneath coconut trees. We're driving around big fat cars eating in fatty boy diners. You know how many people in Hawaii are on welfare? What percent? Of the population is on welfare? If I said all, I would be exaggerating. So I won't say all.
Maybe not by much, though.
Iranian widow faces being stoned to death in days. And let's see, that's in Iran, huh? And MSNBC says what? That's humane? Illegal immigrants sentenced in New Jersey schoolyard murders. I'm shocked. San Francisco considers banning the sale of pets except fish and gerbils. Other stories from MichaelSavage.com are boxers' approval ratings are sinking. No kidding. Kagan the Pagan, still on MichaelSavage.com. Here's one you may have not read. Israel aligns with Christian Greece after losing Muslim Turkey. That's my headline. Israel has finally moved on from its fractured relationship with Turkey, and they're moving into an alliance militarily, economically with Greece. As you well know, the Greeks have a terrible past as a result of Muslim invasions, which killed hundreds of thousands of Greeks in the name of Allah. A new czar, a science czar for Obama, called for a carbon tax to redistribute the wealth from the global north to countries in the south. So if you've always wanted to send a portion of your child's inheritance to Chile, Argentina, Cuba, Guatemala, Nicaragua, you've got just the man in Obama's science czar.
He wants to redistribute wealth. Kagan wants to redistribute speech.
Suicide bombers kill more than 50 in Pakistan. I can't even comment on that. I just can't comment on it. All of this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Don't miss it today, tomorrow, and every day. I went back into one of my earlier books, The Savage Nation. Look at the sound bites I found. Tell me if they still don't apply. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. Liberalism is a dangerous mental disorder. Like decaying civilizations of the past, America's fall will come from the decadence within and the security threats from without. A liberal is someone who wants to understand the guy who just broke into their house, who burnt the place down, who raped his wife and who murdered his kids. He wants to understand them. Let's see. I'm trying to find those that would fit. In the leftist-leaning America of today, you're free to believe whatever you want about religion, unless you're a Jew or a Christian. You know what the greatest pleasure I have every day on my show? I love the taste of liberals in the afternoon. They're particularly succulent by the end of the day. Oh, let's see. I refuse to whistle Dixie while my country is being overrun by psycho-lib communazi organizations like the ACLU, who defend child molesters and terrorists. Back when America was still moral and whole, our meatballs were big, soft, and tasty. Now that we've become immoral and mean and socialist, our meatballs are like Swedish meatballs, small and tasteless. Let's see. In America, I better not read this one. It's liable to really set off a shockwave. Well, there's other things like that. The Founding Fathers guaranteed us freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. I like that one. Also, here's a few others that I wrote back. Then one dirty bomb can ruin your entire day. We need more patent and less patent leather. Most listeners don't know the difference between linguine, fettuccine, and Mussolini. I long for the time of the past when the chrome was thick and there was much less hate. Anyway, we could talk about anything you want here. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And now joining us to discuss the latest from television and Hollywood is James Herson. Hi, James.
Hi, Michael. The mainstream broadcast networks never cease to amaze me with their non-coverage of what is important to us in these critical times. The morning shows are a case in point. For 2 days, when the Today Show, Good Morning America, and the Early Show should have told the country in detail about Obama's recess appointment of this Dr. Kevorkian of Medicare, Dr. Donald Berwick, the morning shows devoted the lion's share of their time to Lindsay Lohan.
Well, of course they did. They'd rather report on the state of a drug-addled Hollywood shrew than report on the state of the nation.
Now, Berwick is the empty-headed leftist who revealed his insanity to an audience in the UK by saying, "Please, don't put your faith in market forces." This guy was then celebrating central planning. Central planning by government despots always creates failure and suffering, while free, spontaneous market forces create prosperity. So not only did Obama hide this guy with an unconstitutional, illicit recess appointment, but the mainstream media joins in the cover-up. This dangerous new member of the Obama oligarchy was not even mentioned for 2 days after the unconstitutional acts, as the morning hosts went into depth covering Lindsay Lohan's jail sentence. NBC's Today Show was the only morning show to mention the new Dr. Death, this Berwick guy, at all. The anchor Lester Holt reported the misuse of the recess appointment as if it was something routine. He said, "President Obama is expected to appoint his choice to oversee Medicare and Medicaid today while Congress is in recess." He acted like he was reporting the weather. And then Holt said, "This means Dr. Donald Berwick won't have to undergo Senate confirmation hearings." I mean, he said that in a condescending manner. Then he added, "Republicans had wanted to question the Harvard professor and healthcare policy expert about comments he made on rationing medical care. And then he never followed up. He says those words, rationing medical care, comments he made. This guy said he wants to ration our health care. Then today spent almost a half hour on Lindsay Lohan's jail sentence. This is a half hour over 2 days. ABC's Good Morning America and CBS's Early Show spent a little over 15 minutes on Lohan. And how much time do they give to this new member of the shadow government, Berwick? None.
That's pathetic.
The unconstitutional appointment of the embodiment of a walking death panel, this character, Berwick, was left out of the coverage. I mean, Berwick is everything the citizens of this country do not want making decisions about matters of life and death. The Cyber News Service reported that during a speech he made for some birthday party of that failed socialized medicine system in Britain, Berwick expressed his concern that the Brits might go back to a free private enterprise healthcare system. So this piece of work not only urged the Brits not to put their faith in market forces, he let us know how he feels about the subject of rationing. Here's what he said, quote, "The decision is not whether or not we will ration care. The decision is whether we will ration with our eyes open." You know, that's your life and your loved ones' lives he's talking about. But when he refuses to allow a life-saving operation or a procedure, his eyes will be open. On the very day that Obama recess appointed this guy, the NBC Nightly News, the CBS Evening News, and ABC's World News did not report it at all. But they did take time to cover Lindsay's 90-day jail sentence. These mainstream broadcast networks are not doing their jobs. They're supposed to be speaking truth to power. They're supposed to be a check on government. They're not doing their jobs. Instead, they're doing a job on us for the benefit of the Democrat Party, the Obama oligarchy, and who knows who else. And they use stories like Lindsay Lohan as an excuse to avoid critical news that can affect all of our lives. It's obvious we would care when a president appoints someone against the will of the people, does so by unconstitutionally misusing a procedure to bypass the scrutiny of our representatives. As to the Lohan story, it is far less important, but there is some newsworthiness there. Because unfortunately, whether we like it or not, Lindsay Lohan has influence. She influences an entire generation of young people. Her lifestyle is one part of a negative sway that she has over her fans. But when she repeatedly violates her probation and lies to a court of law, well, that's another thing entirely. Actually, the judge in the Lohan case did our culture a service. A message was sent that if you behave the way Lohan has, there's a price to pay. You know, Lohan has an additional responsibility she carries as a celebrity. Her behavior, the way she dresses, the substances she takes into her body, these facts are all absorbed by her young fans. This was a child star from an early age. She lived in that celebrity cocoon, and she's obviously totally out of touch with reality. I mean, she's out of touch with reality the way the mainstream media wants all of us to be. This woman appeared in court with profane messages written on her fingernails. And after she was sentenced, she jumped to her computer and used Twitter to portray herself as a victim. She used her Twitter page to cite Article 5 of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, talking about its prohibition against torture an inhuman or degrading treatment. By the way, note, she didn't bring up the Constitution. That's our educational system, isn't it? After that, she actually posted a link to the Newsweek story about this tragedy, this Iranian woman, Sakineh Mohammadi Ashtiani, a woman who has been sentenced to death by stoning. Lohan is actually comparing herself and her 90-day sentence to a woman who was sentenced to be killed by stoning in 2010. Actually, Lindsay received basically a normal sentence for something that she did, even a benign sentence, instead of what she expected, celebrity justice. Look, fame brings with it a loss of personal privacy and a knowledge that a famous person's actions in public will be communicated by the media. The same media will communicate Lindsay Lohan's actions even while they ignore the way Obama is devastating our nation. But apparently, that's the way our left-wing media likes it. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks, James. The cultural gatekeepers' only interest in medicine comes down to which doctor will get them the best drugs. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
No, you gotta understand something. I'll put this, keep playing. It's a delicate thing. Talk radio is like lovemaking in a way. I realize this is, it's not edgy. The trick to lovemaking is to make love without the other party knowing you're doing so. I mean, that's the absolute truth about talk radio. I mean, I'm already into the show, and I'm saying to you, I'm just getting ready to be into the, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, you got the picture. I'm in a delightful mood. It must be the beans. I didn't know that they had that kind of effect on a person. The one thing I said is, I said, are you sure that these are not, what kind of beans are they? Gave me some Italian name. I never heard of them. I said, they're not fava beans. No, because I'm allergic to fava beans. Many people don't know that, but it causes a internal bleeding in certain susceptible individuals. You don't know about this. Genetic, I wrote it in my book in 1983, The Skeptical Nutritionist, long out of print, years ahead of its time, 30 years ahead of its time. But you got to look into fava beans are not for everybody. But they weren't fava beans. These are different kind of beans. We have any more French music? We're allowed to enjoy the French again? They're now our allies? Now that, not, isn't there something better? There's another French cafe sound that I like that I'm trying to get the gist of it. I can't put my finger on it. All I'm thinking about is where I'm going to have dinner tonight. You know, my family had a lot of trouble with me for many, many decades. I was the kind of guy who would eat lunch, walk out of a restaurant on vacation, immediately look in the windows of restaurants down the street and try to decide where I was going to eat dinner. They said, how could you do that? That's impossible. I said, it's a cultural thing. I'm a Mediterranean personality. The minute we finish breakfast, we're thinking about where we're going to have lunch. The minute we have lunch, we think about where we're going to have dinner. I'm not a good guy to go on vacation with in the sense that that's what I do. It's better than, you know, like flying around with a parasail with a lawnmower on your back. I mean, who does that on a vacation? What a lunatic. If he was a sane person, he should be in a bed in the afternoon taking a nap. I don't understand. People go to the tropics. They see an ocean. They think because the ocean's there, all of a sudden they have to be in it 18 hours a day with recreational sports. And it was there long before you were here, Johnson. 2 million years ago, the ocean was there, and it'll be 2 million years from now, and it's not going away. So if you took a nap for 30 minutes, the ocean wouldn't know you were gone, schmuck. You don't have to consume the ocean, I say to myself, as I drift off into slumber, as I take a nap every afternoon, no matter where I am on Earth, because without it, I would have been gone a long time ago. Let me tell you something about naps, the healing power of naps. Totally misunderstood and not understood at all. You want to throw away the Prozac? You want to throw away the Ritalin? You want to throw away your anxiety? Take an afternoon nap. But there's a trick to that as well that only people who know how to nap can tell you about. Because if you sleep too long, you wake up groggy and you're shot for the day. If you don't sleep long enough during the nap, it's worthless. It makes you even more jittery. So here's a trick I learned. I learned this, I don't know where. Have you heard this one before on how long to sleep and how to know how long you've slept? Well, here's old Mark Twain Savage giving you the tip of a lifetime. Now, I want all liberals to turn the show off right now because I don't want you to get any pleasure from the show. And I certainly want you to be more anxious than ever knowing what's coming and how you're going to get yours for what you've done to this country. But for everyone else, every other good American listening to the show, here's how to take a proper nap in the afternoon. You see, what you do is you lie down as though you're going to sleep for the night. I mean, you can't lay down in your clothing. The trick is you got to put on your night. Well, however you sleep at night, you make believe you're going to sleep for the night. That means your pillow. That means however you sleep, naked or in pajamas, whatever you do. You close all the light. The trick is to knock out all of the afferents coming into your head. You're resting your brain now. Remember what you're doing. You lay down and you hold a set of keys in your hand. You know what I mean? You have like a big set of keys that jingle around. You hold them in your hand and you just go to sleep with that hand hanging off the side of the bed. And what you do is you go to sleep. Well, the minute you hear the keys hit the floor, they should wake you up. I take it back, though. You probably have a shag carpet and this won't work. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. All right. I want to go back to the impact of illegal immigration on our teenagers. If you look back upon your life, and I'm a little older than many of the listeners, I had menial jobs as a teenager. I was a busboy. I don't know how many. I worked at an ice cream factory. I could never get those jobs today if I were a kid. Who is it who used to wash cars and wash boats in this country? Teenagers. Who is it who used to work at county fairs? Teenagers. Do you realize that the illegal immigrants have taken up every job that teenagers used to take, thereby weakening or destroying the work ethic in this country? I don't blame the illegal immigrants. It's a national problem that has not been solved, that the illegal immigrants want the work and the employers want the labor. The kids don't know how to work and won't work. They won't wash a car. They won't wash a boat. They'd rather stay home and smoke marijuana, et cetera. They don't know how to work. They go to college. They come out. They can't add, read, or write, and yet they want to run the company. You know the problems. We've all hired kids who've just come out of college. They're virtually incapable of doing anything. We know that. Why is that? How come by the time I got out of college, I could do certain things? The answer is because I worked from the time I was 5 years old in one job or another. I held menial jobs. I told you I worked in factories. Look it up. It's real. Busboy, waiter, lifeguard, you name it, I did it. Gas stations. I don't even remember the jobs. 11 years old, I remember I lost in a card game. I was afraid to go home. I thought my father would yell at me. What did I lose? $20? $18? I don't know what, $9? I took a job washing dishes in a local luncheonette up on Queens on Union Turnpike I forget the street in Queens. My father called the police. He didn't know where I was. I didn't call home. I wanted to come home with the money and tell him I lost the money and took a job, and I wanted to show him that I was able to take care of myself. He was proud of me. He didn't get mad at me. The fact is, we took these jobs because they were available to us. The country was not swimming with non-citizens who are desperate for work and took the work instead of us. So teenagers took jobs that were available in candy stores or wherever they may be. And so what I'm saying to you is take a look at the effects. I don't think anyone's covered this in any great detail. It's an interesting topic for a sociologist to cover if he's a balanced sociologist. I don't know how many of them are left. But the impact of illegal immigration on America's teens' working habits or work ethic per se is a hell of a topic for somebody to write for a master's thesis. Unfortunately, you'll never get it approved at your socialist university. The only thing you could write that on would be to show how illegal immigrants helped your child become a drug addict. Then if you could show that in a positive manner, that it moved more children to discover the inner drug addict in themselves, I'm sure it would get approved by your thesis committee, but the other one wouldn't. Well, that's it for this subject. I don't want to beat this up. It's going to get bigger by the day, by the way. It's going to get bigger because we have a man who's not the leader of the country leading the country. We have a man who could have stopped this if he really wanted to stop it. All he had to do was act like a leader and come out from behind his lectern and his teleprompters and say, while I don't agree with the law that was passed in Arizona, I understand the frustration of the citizens of the state. They are a sovereign state. There are states' rights in the country. And although I disagree with the law, I'm sure that the police are going to do a fine job, and they're being trained to do a fine job. There's absolutely not racism involved. And we're going to do a much better job as a federal government in controlling the flood of drugs and illegal aliens into Arizona. But he didn't do that. Instead, he came out like the demagogue he is, like the inexperienced demagogue, community activist that he is, like the Marxist-Leninist internationalist that he is, and right away sue the state of Arizona for passing their own laws. So that's the kind of situation that we have. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here in California, the California police verdict has sparked looting. I don't know what stealing sneakers out of a Foot Locker store has to do with justice. But as you well know, these vandals have no desire to talk about justice. It had nothing to do with the killing of a black man by a white police officer. All it was an excuse to pillage and burn. You know that, and I know that. Now, of course, the only person who doesn't know that is our distinguished Attorney General, Eric Holder, who said he's going to review the Oakland police shooting. It's not enough that the policeman was given a long jail sentence for, you know, it's what it is, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. He certainly didn't mean to kill this kid. And I said yesterday that the killing was not justified, but I believe it was an accident in the midst of a tussle. And now Holder, of course, has nothing better to do but to review the shooting in Oakland. Instead of reviewing the corruption in Congress, he's going to distract us with this garbage.
Well, given the way they handled the Black Panther case, I'm sure the Justice Department will take very good care of it.
Well, I'm sure that they found him guilty of jury tampering already.
No doubt.
There's a lame duck strategy being talked about, which is that the three stooges, Obama, Pelosi, and Reid, are going to use the time after the elections in November to push forward the union card check, cap and trade, and so much more of their socialist nightmare. It's astounding that they're going to even try that. New poll came out that says 55% of likely voters think Obama is a socialist. I'm not shocked by that. I've been instructing them as to that for about 3 years now, 2 years now, right?
America's finally waking up to it.
Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Let's hear some music for Rock and Roll Friday. The verdict in the Oakland police shooting case came out. The cop who shot a black suspect was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Now, the fact is that the poor guy was killed, and he shouldn't have been. But the verdict, I think, was fair. It was involuntary. But that wasn't good enough for the street communists, the anarchists, mainly the white radicals who decided to push the blacks to riot in the streets. But one man stood up to them, Oscar Grant Sr., that's the grandfather of the man who was shot dead.
People of Oakland, people of the Bay Area, I want to say one thing to you. I know what oppression is about the Anglo-Saxons, but this is not what we're about. Please! Let's keep peace in honor of my grandson, my son, his mama, and his wife, and his my great-granddaughter.
Now, that's a man of peace and honor. And by the way, if you looked at Oscar Grant Sr.'s hat, it said 101st Airborne on it. Does that tell you why he's an honorable man?
I know what went down today is wrong. But see, if you don't understand law, you got to go to school and understand it. You know, the hardest thing to do is to prove murder. It's easy to prove premeditated because it's a planned murder. Please don't tear up the Bay Area. We live here. Now, for some of you young folks that don't understand it, 1965, they tore up Watson, Los Angeles. And if you ain't been there lately, go there now. They never built it back up. Watson still tore that. I don't want my home like that.
Now, keep in mind, he lost his grandson, but he still understands that violence and destruction is the wrong way.
Please, don't tear up the Bay Area. I love Oakland like everybody else do. And the great one that went to the mountaintop. You can't solve nothing with violence. You cannot solve nothing with violence. You know, you got to beat the people by representing. Vote, get out there and do what you got to do, but doggone me, you protest righteously. Don't come out here fighting. Don't dishonor my grandson's death by coming out here tearing up Oakland. If you people know something about the Lord, Genesis 9 verse 6 says that man that takes another man's life shall pay for it with his own.
Amen.
So leave that alone. I know the verdict was wrong, but let's don't tear Oakland up for it.
What's wrong is wrong, what's right is right. Whatever comes around, comes around.
Two rights don't make a wrong, or two wrongs don't make a right. Please, the people, and I love all of you.
Did you hear that? He quoted the Bible. Now compare that to the Black Panthers.
I hate white people, all of them. Every last iota of a cracker, I hate him. We didn't come out here to play today. There's too much serious business going on in the black community to be out here sliding through South Street with white, dirty, cracker whore on our arm, and we call ourselves black men with African garb on. What the hell is wrong with you, black man? You had a doom day with a white girl on your damn arm. You want freedom? You're going to have to kill some crackers. You're going to have to kill some of their babies.
Now, that's the kind of man Obama wants to protect. And what is Obama up to? Talking about why Israel is suspicious of him because his middle name is Hussein. I don't think Israel's the only one who has noticed that.
I had the impression that Prime Minister Netanyahu isn't interested in just occupying a space, a position, but he's interested in being a statesman and putting his country on a more secure track. Some of it may just be the fact that my middle name is Hussein, and that creates suspicion. Some of it may have to do with the fact that I have actively reached out to the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, particularly in the Middle East, there's the feeling of, the friend of my enemy must be my enemy.
Well, I have some suspicions myself. And his ally, Babi Bakhtia, is struggling to keep her fetid Senate seat. Yahoo.
Your unfavorability ratings have jumped to 52%. Why do you think more than half of California voters just don't like you?
Well, it's not about liking. They're not happy with the economy, and they shouldn't be. They want to know who's on their side. And Jessica, I think it's important to note that in March, the field poll had me up by one. So we're going in the right direction.
So I'll take your calls now, that's all. San Francisco, Jeremy, thanks for calling the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, I totally want to support Arizona, and I am Mexican, yes, and I just called to support Arizona.
I hear you, and I got to tell you something else. You know, I go to restaurants where most of the workers are of Hispanic descent. I can't say I know what every one of them thinks on every issue with to do with immigration. I know that some of them come up to me, and they want to give me food for free, which I won't accept. Just as a general principle, I won't accept it in restaurants. But the fact is that they understand that my values are their values. They're family-oriented. They believe in God. They protect their children. Every one of the values that I express on this show so repeatedly, they respect as well, and they appreciate that. And they also appreciate a man willing to speak out for his own nation with some passion. And with some love. You don't understand this, do you? And that's because most of you don't even love your nation. You don't even know you have one. Most of you despicable, spineless liberals don't even know that you live in a nation that is sovereign. Most of you consider yourselves citizen of the world. Well, if I could, my good friends, I wish only that you would travel to that world and not come back to this nation. This nation has a name. This nation has a set of borders. This nation has a language, and this nation has a cultural foundation. And if you don't like it, why don't you move to Denmark? I see one of the darlings of the conservative media saying Afghanistan is Obama's war. I guess she listens to the Savage Nation. It's clear to me that nobody wants this war except the military-industrial complex and the neocons at the Weekly Standard, the ones who drug us into to Iraq, so to speak, you know.
I noticed that she called for the resignation of the neocon who sounds like a Southern California surfer.
Why is that guy from the Weekly Standard so important? When, if he is so gung-ho for the war, why isn't that pudgy guy from the east side of Manhattan, Bill Kristol, who would be nowhere was it not for his father's money, by the way. I mean, he's a nice enough, you know, guy. He reminds me of, you know, an easygoing, nice guy. But why is he so gung-ho on war? Where did he get the idea that war is something that is morally good for America? Why doesn't he just enlist in the military, put on a uniform, and go fight on the front lines, to put his body where his mouth is?
Savage.